All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, and we are blessed today to have once again the presence of our co-host and producer, Moritz Batschreiter.
Hello, hello.
If you can, you can probably tell that my voice sounds a little bit rough again. If you can believe it or not, a second time this year, I lost my voice, which is pretty crazy. It didn't seem to be so regular in the past. But I blew it out over the weekend. My sister-in-law got married. And I don't know if it was just because the weather was colder than we thought it was going to be. Like, it was supposed to be a nice, warm, summery, hot spring day. But it rained the night before, and then it was kind of cloudy for most of the day. And I ended up, which was kind of lucky, I had bought a tweed suit, like a wool suit.
Ooh, nice.
Which is pretty, and I'm super happy with it. But I was worried it was going to be a little too hot for that day. But thankfully, it was the perfect choice because it was kind of cold that day. And I didn't have to wear like a bunch of extra clothing or anything. Just the suit by itself was nice and warm. And yeah, I don't know if it was just I had to run back and forth with all this gear. Like they asked me kind of, I wouldn't say, I don't want to sound like unhappy about it or anything, but it was kind of last minute to organize like all of the sound for the wedding. Like they had a funny setup because they have this band called the Swing Boots, I think. Swing
Boot? No. Did you say boots or boobs?
I would like it so much more if it was the Swinging Boobs. That would be great. That would be very different songs.
Sorry, it's just the internet connection sometimes.
Yeah, sure. Oh my god. Yeah, the Swing Boobs, they played like really great old standards, like In the Mood and You Are My Sunshine, all these classics. But they did it kind of unplugged, like the guitar, it was a quartet, and the guitar player had this small little pocket amp that so he could be mobile. And the drummer had one of those, like, you know, young Chinese dogs stand-up kits.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a small thing, like a snare, two splash cymbals, and a kick. And then he could just move on a tripod like that. And he moved it around, and then they would walk throughout the crowd. So that was cool because they could move from table to table and ask for requests and like entertain a table for a couple of songs and then move around. That was kind of nice. But it became clear kind of early on that no one really organized with the band what they should do and what they would like from them. They kind of just, I think they just said like, will you play the wedding from starting at 2:00 or something? And they were like, yeah, because everything that they did kind of surprised everybody. Like, we didn't know that they would roam from table to table. We kind of thought they would at the coffee and cake part because it kind of made sense. But then, so for those who don't know, in certain parts of traditional German weddings, there, or at least in Bavaria, there's like the bride stealing. But the bride stealing in this
one sounds awful in English.
It sounds
actually
really like this, the kidnapping of the bride. I mean, maybe you can explain that tradition real quickly and I can lead it back to the story about the band.
Like, I'm not the wedding expert here, but, it's like, I don't know. Why don't we just, I don't know how much do you remember of it and how much you even were part of it at your own wedding?
Yeah. What I know about it is that it's a very, very old tradition that stems back to, like, I think the royals who lived in Germany, like the kings and queens and stuff. But that wasn't so long ago, but, you know, maybe a few hundred years back. And originally the premise was that, as far as I know, the modernized version of it was that the bridesmaids and the family and the team or whatever of the bride would not literally kidnap, but, you know, more or less, I think it was more intense back in the old days, but like take the bride to an unknown location to the groom to be. And sometimes it was in a different town, which I think is, I'm so lucky that I don't live in that era because that would have been crazy. But that they would take the bride during the bridal dances to a town, into a bar or a pub, or a place filled with alcohol. And the goal would be that the bride and the bride's family and team would drink as much white wine as they possibly could until the groom and his team found them. And then when they found them, the best man, I think this is right, the best man of the groom is supposed to pay for the damage done of how much they drank. But as time has gone by, and it's become a little bit more popularized, a little more routine at weddings, it's become more of like kind of just part of the dance. Like when you pick your location for the wedding, you pick the place where the bride will be taken to, which sounds funny, but like everything is planned now. Now everyone knows where they will be. It's more about just kind of like at someone's birthday, you just sing the song. Like you just know you're going to sing happy birthday. You just don't know if it's going to be before the cake is cut or later by the pool. You just, you know, it's going to be done, but you don't know where. And now you just know like, okay, we're going to do it. I guess it's going to be here at this spot. And at our wedding, I knew where it was going to be, but I still...
You knew? That's the next thing I wanted to ask you.
I knew roughly, like they gave me as much as I would ask for, but once I had enough information, I stopped asking because it was still kind of fun to not really know everything. But I knew that, of course, the ceremony was on this nice, like, flat platform on a beautiful summer day, with, like, under this big tree, and it was really nice and, like, calm and serene. And then you go down this hill and there's this big barn, and that was where we had the reception, you know, with the tables for dinner, sorry, and the coffee and the presentations and the bands and all that stuff. And I knew that obviously, cause we had toured the location, that there was this like half castle next to it, like this open kind of broken off old castle structure there. And they had discussed, oh, this will be great for the bride stealing. And I thought, okay. So this is where they'll be like when we do it. But then I didn't ask too much more about it. I didn't ask like how it gets arranged or who sets it up or how I can help. I just knew like, okay, this is something that will happen and I'll just have to kind of like adjust to it. And then when we were doing the bridal dances, it was really exciting because you feel the energy of the room shift and all of a sudden it's very sneaky and very like cheeky and fast and kind of everyone's really excited and there's like this electricity and all of a sudden you're getting pulled into dances with people that you didn't know you were going to be like, so like one of her cousins grabbed me and was like spinning me around. And then one of my friends grabbed me and was like spinning me around. And I knew that it was happening. I knew things were being changed. All of a sudden, like all the groomsmen and the cousins and the family and the bridesmaids, they were all swooping in and making distractions. And then Efi was gone. And then, oh, like all my friends were gone. And then this family was gone. And then whatever, basically at the end, everyone was gone. Except for like me, Efi's dad, my mom, and I think Vivi?
That could be, yeah.
Or Jenna. It was like me. It was like four of us at the very, very last. And I was like, okay, where do we go? Where is everybody? I was like, are they up there? And then we had to walk up this little, like this, well, pretty steep dirt path, I guess. And then you got there and then it was like, then I really saw it, what they meant. It was just this huge white wine party. Which was yeah. Like, you know, and all the Americans there really, including, I mean, I knew it was going to happen, but especially the touring Americans there specifically for the wedding, they were so surprised by this. And it was such a, I mean, imagine that. Imagine you're there and you don't know what's going to happen. All of a sudden everyone's running out of the room and you're like, what's going on? And then you follow up this hill and you're in this castle and someone's handing you a bottle of white wine to just chug. And like, there's some guys up there playing acoustic guitar and people's jackets are coming off. That someone makes a necklace out of empty white wine bottles and hangs it around my neck. Someone gave me like a fedora, like covered in flowers. I felt like I was the girl in Midsummer, just without all the murder and drugs. and then after a while, I mean, it just kind of simmers to a point where you're like, okay, let's go back down. And the reason we even brought that up was like, at Maria's wedding, we knew there'd be a bride stealing. I didn't know where it was going to be at all. I had never been to the location. I didn't know any of the details. So the funny thing was, we knew it was going to be time for that. And me and Maria's dad and brother were supposed to be the entertainment during the bride dances whilst she is stolen. And so we're playing these songs, but we're doing such an awful job that most of the distraction, like most of the attention is on how bad we're doing. It was so brutal. It was the worst performance ever. Everybody did so bad. It was so bad. Like, I just tried to keep my shit together, but like, those guys did so bad. It was unbelievable. And they know they did too. It was so funny at the end. We were like, wow, we really fucked that up, boys. She wanted us to play The Weight from the band and to play Wagon Wheel from Old Crow Medicine Show. Mm-hmm. And then for the band to play You Are My Sunshine, like in this order. And we played The Weight like 10 beats too fast and off key as all hell. And
did you do the harmonies?
We tried, but I don't think we succeeded. It was very, very bad. Like, it was so funny, man. We had practiced it, and it sounded decent. Like, actually, I was impressed with them. I thought, this is going to sound good. And then for some reason, they just got nervous, or they didn't care, or something. Something was just off. And we went to do it, and maybe because it was also so fast. It was like, take a load off, Fanny. Take a load for free. It was way too fast. And we started to get to the chorus, and Bixep is supposed to hold the first, and then the brother's supposed to go, and then me, and. But the first two guys screwed it up, so I didn't know where to go. So it was like, and then I just went, and somehow we got to like put the load right on me. It was so bad. So we did that, and I don't know. They were trying to dance to this song. It was so embarrassing. They were like two-stepping to this weird off-time folks tune from the 70s.
And then a video game where we have a scene of a club of people dancing, but like very bad animated, like early 2000s video game characters.
Yes.
Like from one foot to the other.
Yeah, it is. It was like playing Miami Vice or something. Or was it Vice City? Right, Vice City. But yeah, we did that. And then we did Wagon Wheel, which was just as bad. Just as bad. I mean, the funny thing about Wagon Wheel was there's three verses. So we just shared the verses. And like Yosef took one, Sepp took one, I took one. And yeah, we did the best that we could, you know. And the chorus is every drunk guy in the world can sing the chorus. So that was a little better. And somewhere in that, I think, or around the time we end and it goes into You Are My Sunshine, Maria and Daniel are no longer there. And I go, she's been taken. Okay. But I didn't know where they were going to go. I just figured someone would like, I'd see a rush of people running somewhere and I would just join in. But what ended up happening was that she had been taken into the building.
Mm-hmm.
Upstairs, there was this back room that had a bar and a big open floor. Now, my stupid self had gone in that room early on in the day and wondered, what's this room for? It's empty. I didn't even put it together. Oh, maybe this is for the bride stealing. Like, I went in that room because that's where we all had dinner and that's where the DJ was going to be and that's where the bathrooms were. And then past that, there was just the door you open and there was like a full bar in an empty room. And I didn't think to myself what that could be used for. I was like, they have a stocked room in here? That's funny. And so I found out later that that's where she'd been taken to. The band had played. So this is the weird thing about the band. So obviously no one had told them, when she gets taken up to that room, you should stay and play immediately and play the whole time. Because I had broken down all of the equipment. Like, we played our songs, the band played their song, and then the group of people sort of dissipated. And I thought, oh, okay, this performance is over now. I'll break down the cables and break down because I was in charge of all that stuff and I didn't want to do it later in the night. So I was breaking everything down. It was taking my time. And then I was like, I'll take a break here. Go see where Efi's at, check on the twins, get a beer. And I went up into that back room because I saw that the door was open and there were people in there. And I walked in and it was just like, I don't know, 60 or 70 people all drinking white wine with no music and just talking. And I went, I mean, I'm so stupid. I didn't think to myself to ask like, hey, what's going on? Wow, this is weird. I just went up to Ify with my wine. I was like, hey, how's it going? Like, and no one had said like, no one was freaking out. No one was talking about how it was just this weird, quiet room. And then Maria has this close friend named Stenka. And she was basically in charge of operations. Mm-hmm. And I went up to her and she was panicking. And she was like, Jordan, we need music. We need music right now. I don't know where the band is. The band isn't here. We don't know where they are. And I'm panicking. And I was like, oh, and I didn't think to ask like, why do you need music? What's going on? I was just like, okay, sure. Don't stress. I'll go get a speaker from downstairs. So I went to go get a speaker from the PA. I brought the mixer up. I got an adapter cable to plug my phone into. And I set all this up and it took like 10 minutes. And just as I was about to press play on some playlist for the room, the band walks in and they were like, oh, thank God the band's here. And I went, oh. I said, ah, there must have been some misunderstanding. The band's here. Everything's fine. So the band starts playing. They play these really fun songs. They play Tequila, like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It was great. We had a fun time. All of a sudden, it felt like after maybe 40 minutes, the band says, they do this announcement in the corner. They're like, all right, this is going to be our last tune. I was like, what? They're like, thanks a lot for having us and we hope you enjoyed it and here's our website, whatever. And they played a song and then they just left. And they left and I think they played like a couple more songs to the outside tables. When I went to Stinka, I was like, what's going on? I thought the band was playing for this room. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems like they don't know what's going on and no one talked to them. And I said, wait a second. Was this where the bride was stolen to? After all that? I was like, was this where Maria? And she was like, yeah, of course, duh. And I went, oh my God. No wonder you were so stressed about music. She was stolen to this room and no one knows what's going on and there's no band. I was like, I didn't even know. I was being so, I was so naive, man. I was like, I have my job. I did my job. Now what's up? And then I just, so silly. And the band just left. So then we had to think about what else to do. Finally, at least after that, it was like pretty much dinner time. So
nice.
I had some food and the food was really good. They had, I forgot if I had a different point before that, but basically, yeah, I did the sound and we played the songs and, oh, but I should say before I move on from the music part, I did the ceremony, which was very beautiful. I was very happy with that. It was, outside. It wasn't too cold. Like maybe 130, 140 people there. And I brought all the sound gear just in time. I set everything up. It looked nice. And then, Stenka was in charge of giving me the cues for everything. And this worked out great. Maria was in the back. She was about to walk down with her dad. Everyone was walking down in succession. It felt like it happened really fast because I was supposed to play just one song as everyone who walks down the aisle walks down. You know, you imagine like, oh, it's Daniel with maybe his mom and then like, you know, Maria and the dad and maybe the bridesmaids and stuff. But it just seemed like three or four people walked down because I played, they wanted the song, Do You Know No One's Gonna Love You by Band of Horses?
Yeah.
So they wanted that one as like the bride song. So I played that. I didn't even get to finish it because I felt like I didn't want them to just be sitting there listening to me when they're supposed to talk, you know? But because I'd started it and they had come all the way down the aisle, all the way up to the front. Everyone had sat down. Maria and Daniel had met. They were at their chairs and they were seated. And it was just Stenka standing there with her microphone looking at me. And I thought, wow, that was fast. I shouldn't finish the song. It's another minute at least. It's going to be awkward. So I just found a moment like after another verse and just made it sound like this is the ending.
After you're shredding for another minute, like pulling out a guitar solo, you finally found a moment.
Give me one more second, guys. This one's just for you. And
this one's inspired by the great Steve Way.
Exactly. And yeah, I played that one. That was nice. And then they had requested this John Prine song called In Spite of Ourselves. But they wanted me to write original lyrics replacing his about Maria and Daniel. So Maria had written me funny things that Daniel does. Like, oh, he leaves a mess behind. He, what's some other things? He loves concrete. I forgot exactly what she wrote, but somehow I made it into the song. And then he
That's
wrote
a pretty
me.
Cool fun fact about someone. Loves concrete.
She wrote me, the smell of concrete makes him horny.
Okay.
And so we just put that all in the song, dude, like verbatim. And then Daniel wrote me stuff about Maria. And then Efi, of course, was like the key to the song being funny, because Daniel and Maria will tell you things about each other, but they won't say anything too personal or too embarrassing because they're just too polite. That's just not what they do. But Efi sure did. She stepped in and she was like, did you know that if you make Maria laugh, she farts? And I was like, that's going in the song. And then I told them, I wrote Maria and I said, hey, I finished the song. It's very funny. I don't think it belongs in the ceremony anymore. I said, I think we should do it in the evening when everyone's had some drinks. And she said, no. We want it in the ceremony. I said, okay, it's your wedding. And sure enough, man, I was really proud of Efi too. She sang with me. She never sings. She was very shy, but she did it. She did a great job, actually. And she sang with me like this duet. And I sang about Maria and she sang about Daniel. And it was great, man. Like, not everyone obviously understood all the English lyrics, but those who understood, we cleaned house, dude. We destroyed them. And funny enough, Maria and Daniel didn't know that I got additional information from Efi. I only made the song out of what they told me, which was very nice stuff. So when I sang the part, Maria, like, she drives like her daddy. It'll stop your heart. If you make her laugh, she'll pop a little fart. When I sang that line, she almost stood up out of her chair, like looking at Daniel, like, how could you tell them that I fart and I laugh? And he was like, I didn't tell them that. I didn't say anything. And that was during the song, too. Oh god, it was great. That was so good.
Man, that sounds like a great wedding.
It was a blast, man. It was really a blast. And yeah, we did that one. I did another nice song that they wanted, and then I played a fourth and final song as they walked off. So actually it was a little stressful getting all the songs together and getting all the gear together, but it worked in the end. Like, I think everything came out really good except for the songs with her dad and her brother. But that was also funny. Every wedding has to have a bad song.
Yeah, sure.
And then the rest of the party was great. This is about the time I started losing my voice. We had dinner. The food was good. They had like a buffet. You could get like fresh lamb and steak and fish and nice potatoes and spätzle and all these nice sides and great cakes. And then, not long after dinner was over, the DJ just started in this room, which I thought was almost a little sudden because it was like 10:30. It didn't really feel that late because the sun didn't go down till like 10.
Yeah.
So I thought, damn, that's fast. But that's when everyone started to try and like really just kick off the party. And we would have stayed really late. I think the whole party went until just about 3 a.m. or a little after 3 a.m. And everyone was basically home probably around like 5.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me is very glad that I didn't do that, because I don't know that I could have managed to live the next day after all the work I did at the wedding, plus the twins, plus having like a few drinks. It would have been really hard. Part of me is glad that I didn't do it. The other part of me is always, of course, like, well, it's a wedding, it's a party. I kind of wish I had have seen it, but we had to leave around, I want to say like 11:30, like maybe not even midnight, because, the babies just, they were asleep, but then they just, I don't know, they started having these, like, they started panicking and screaming. They just were inconsolable. I guess they just woke up. They didn't know where they were. They weren't in their bed. Everything was loud. Makes
their
sense.
Their dad was performing awfully.
Oh my God. They were so embarrassed of me. They were so ashamed. They were screaming a lot. So we just said we had to go, but our friend Kati was there. And I texted her later and was like, well, how was the rest of the night? She's like, oh, you're going to love this. I said, how was the rest of the night? Like, what was the DJ good? And she said, what do you think? He ended up playing Liquido and Totenhosen. Do you know them?
I know that, but like, if someone told me that based on my taste of music, I would say like, okay, it's been not that great, but I know many, many people think that this is the very good like peak of a DJ set or a party.
Really? That's funny. I only know it from the satirical point of view. I don't really know the music that well, but whenever I've been told that like, oh, they played Totenhosen, it's always with this eye roll. So I assume it was like when they play like Cotton Eye Joe or something at a, you know, you're like, oh my God. yeah, but it was good. It was a really fun time. And the next day, we somehow survived it, but my voice was completely gone. It hit just blown out. But, nice. Yeah, man. But that was my weekend. What did you get into?
Not that much. I wanted to get back to the bright ceiling. Well, I think because I think as far as I know it, besides like your wedding and your wedding, like I didn't I didn't get it at all. Like at one moment, I don't know who it was. I think it was Tim, but I'm not sure. Like, dude, what you still doing here? Get your ass up. We're going to steal the bride now. But in general, I'm not sure if white wine is necessarily part of it.
Okay.
Like if you're not doing it in a fancy place like a medieval castle or something, I know it that they just take the bride to, I don't know, a bar or restaurant nearby. And a general rule, and I think that could be like, okay, you have to drink a freaking lot, but is that the room has to find her and to kind of he has to pay some form of ransom.
Okay.
And that could be anything. That could be, I don't know, three wishes that the bride has or some challenge or whatever.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, maybe it was just more of the Geiger perspective. Like, we used to just do white wine and pay the bill or whatever.
Could be that's
you know?
a family tradition.
Yeah, maybe so. Oh, that's interesting, though. But does it say, maybe you just said it, but how old it is, how far back it goes?
No, I don't know that, but it must be pretty old, and I also know that it's rather a Bavarian or at least Southern German thing, but it's all I know, actually.
Yeah, I don't think people in the North know about it.
And hey, I'm still too young to be a wedding expert, sorry.
Not for much longer, big boy. No, stay young, enjoy it.
One other story that was super funny, I've been to the concert, to a concert for the first time in like a year or something.
You went to a concert?
Yeah. Because you mentioned like kids that are bored or embarrassed by their parents' performance.
Yeah.
Like I've been at Circus Krone at the Helge Schneider concert. You know Helge Schneider?
You went to the Helge Schneider concert?
Yeah, sure I did. Like I'm a huge fan.
That's awesome.
And at first I was kind of a bit disappointed because the last time I've seen him has been like 6 years ago. And back then he used to have a big band and great musicians with him, like the drummer Pete York. I don't know if you knew him.
Oh,
played
yeah.
with Steve Winwood, etc. in the 60s.
For sure, yeah. That's awesome.
And this time it was a super small setting. Just him and playing piano and vibraphone and these kinds of instruments. A guitarist, a bass player that couldn't play bass.
Oh,
I think
this
was part of the joke. an acoustic guitar player and a drummer. And the thing is, the drummer was a like 12-year-old boy.
Oh,
maximum 14 years old. And the funny thing is, I guess it must have been his son or the son of the guitar player or something, because it was so funny to see because this boy was when. In between the songs, Helge Schneider would do his kind of, you could say, stand-up parts.
Right.
Which could fade in into songs, and he plays full, like, jams and songs that are part of a joke, etc. But in these talking parts in between, like, would be super bored. And it was a setup, like a jazz band, so the drum kit was not in the back, but, like we're all in kind of a line or forming kind of a light hue.
Yeah.
So the drum kit was at front of the stage, and this boy was sitting there like super embarrassed and annoyed by the stand-up parts of Helge Schneider. And I thought, okay, that could only be like if you have any form of personal relationship.
Otherwise,
you wouldn't dare to do it. But this was super fun to see because, like, and that boy could play. It was crazy. He was really good.
Really?
Like crazy good. But the thing is, like, in between, he was so bored, and that was part of the show. Like, having this teenage boy on stage who's really embarrassed and doesn't care about the stuff, like this great artist so many people admire does there.
Right.
Helge Schneider's always trying to get him involved and puts up like fancy cowboy hats on his head, etc. and stuff like that. And then for me, the most funny thing, I think most people didn't even realize it, is that because he was so young, the concert had to be finished at 10 p.m. because of like youth protection. Like if you're under 14, you're not allowed to perform or I think be out in general after 10 p.m.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so they finished right at like 9:59.
Oh, wow.
Went off stage, and then he came up all alone, Helge Schneider, like for the encore.
Oh, that's cool though. It's cool that he came back out like to do it again, more.
Yeah, it was kind of surreal, like you would expect, but I was, first of all, super happy to see Helge Schneider again, because I'm not sure if you...
I don't know too much about his story. I know that a lot of people adore him and respect him. At first, when you said you saw him, my reaction made it sound like I think he's not good. I don't know his comedy. I know who he is because he's very famous, but I know that a lot of people really love him. Like Ify told a story once about how she watched a special he did, and he like spent 30 minutes just getting to a piano from where he started walking.
Yeah.
And every little tiny thing he did, just like uproarious laughter. So yeah. It kind of reminds me of like Mr. Bean, like Rowan Atkinson. If I think about that, I find that style of humor is super funny. So I don't know his shows, but I know he's really admired.
Like Helge Schneider, and like, I don't know, that might be a super weird thing about me, but when I was like between like 13 and 18, me and my best friend, like we really idolized Helge Schneider. I'm not, but to explain him in general, like it's this nonsense humor all along, like this dadaistic nonsense humor. And getting so much out of simple situations just by, yeah, like you mentioned, little details, the way he walks, like, or this one little joke that he could turn a word around but stretches his weight. It's like this, you know, a bit like in like comedy shows. Like one example that comes to my mind is like on Family Guy, when they do these flashbacks that are way too long, and part of the gag is that they stretch it out even more.
Right, right.
Like, I don't know.
Like the chicken fight.
Do you remember when the autistic postman like ringed like 400 times and they play it like 400 times?
It's so insane.
And
yeah.
Like that's a big part of his humor. Plus, he's an insane musician. Like he's this crazy jazz god. There used to be a web show by Bayerischer Rundfunk, Helge Schneider Explains Jazz, which I don't know why they didn't continue it. Maybe not that many people saw it, but it's crazy good. And the combination of these two things, like this great kind of innocent, dadaistic nonsense humor, because he's not offending anyone. It's just his, like he's living in his world and just lets people be part of this nonsense.
That's so cool.
The fact that he's a great musician on so many instruments, but often plays that down by like intentionally playing, like, do you say dilettantistic? I don't know. Just
awful. I don't know.
Just bad. Like playing
like
bad intentionally,
bad.
And then switching back to great like jazz tune or something with the band. And yeah, he's like a great artist. But I had the fear because he didn't take like the whole COVID thing too well. And I had, for a moment, I thought like, okay, has he gone like, in the wrong direction in terms of...
Has he floated to the right side?
Yeah, and denying COVID sort of, but as it turned out, it was not that thing because there was a situation last year in Augsburg. He played in open air in a kind of COVID setting, like a car concert, but I think it was like these... Do you know these kind of also very German thing? It's called Strandkorb. These like
Strandkorb,
tiny...
No.
Tiny, could you say tiny houses or like a huge...
Isn't Korb basket? Beach basket?
I don't know if there's even a translation for it because Strandkorb. I'm not sure if... Like a beach chair, but with the roof and...
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. The shadow protectant, like wicker beach chairs.
Yeah. So and they put up these to make to have like couples sit there, but having distance and kind of a COVID gig, open air.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the middle of it, he just went off stage and was like, sorry, I can't do this anymore. Like, it's hurting me as an artist so much to perform under these circumstances. I'm out.
Yeah, I can. But honestly, I can understand that it sucks to play. Like, I played a concert over Zoom.
Yeah.
And it was terrible. And I knew I would never do another one. Not because I was pro every restriction or rule or any sort of protection. Like, it was just the fact of like, well, I'll just have to keep waiting because this isn't the answer.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, he's been around for like 40 or already 50 years. And so, like, he's, I can understand that he's pissed off by the thing. And then he put out a statement like, okay, if this goes on any longer, besides that these rules are necessary, etc., he's gonna quit on his career. He's not performing anymore. He's gonna stop everything and just enjoying the rest of his life on his own.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And so I was super glad that he actually came back and did not make that happen. And so it was great, yeah.
That's awesome, man. Was it a super expensive show or was it reasonable?
Or did you? It was pretty reasonable. I didn't even have to pay the ticket because, like, originally the cousin of a friend of mine had two tickets. Then his the guy he wanted to go with couldn't do it. Then himself couldn't come, and so my friend got first one ticket, then both tickets, and took me. And then we kind of had a deal, like I paid the drinks, etc. But I think it was not too expensive, like 20 or 30 bucks.
That's totally reasonable for something like that.
Dude, I just bought Kendrick Lamar tickets for Berlin for 100 euros.
Oh my God, when is he playing? I love the new album.
October 11th in Berlin. But he's also playing like 11th. Stuttgart and Berlin. Frankfurt, as far as I know.
Kendrick. Oh my God, dude, I would... love to see Kendrick. I just saw a list of concerts that are busting out in Munich in the summer. And because I'm at so many weddings, so many weddings, I won't make them. Like, dude, Andrew Bird is going to play. Phoebe Bridgers is going to play. There was another one. Like Arcade Fire, I think, is going to play.
Mm-hmm.
There's like three or four that I was like, oh my God, I have to see them. I'm like, I have to. And then it was like, oh, July 14. You're like, fuck. But at least Kendrick's playing later in the year. Maybe that's possible. Let me see. Like,
yeah, man. But weddings are a huge problem. Like, now that COVID is kind of over, you cannot plan anything because everyone is at weddings. I wanted to throw a birthday party. You knew about that. And it invited like 60 people, which normally would be too much for like my little flat, but you know in advance like at least 20 people will not gonna make it.
Right.
And in the end, like 8 people turned up because everyone was at weddings.
Dude, everybody is at weddings and it's really, really, really getting crazy. It's really getting crazy out there. Yeah, I mean, like I even did, I think I talked about it on last week's American Sunday. But this wedding was delayed for 2 years and they did it like right down to the day of when they were supposed to have it. And then I've got to go, and now people are having weddings abroad. Like all these international couples are having weddings abroad. So, I mean, it sounds bad to complain. So I'm not really complaining, but it's just, you know, it's money and it's time and we have kids and it's just not as easy as it used to be. But now we're going to Greece in like 13 days, like
for
already
wedding.
For another wedding. Yeah. Which I've been asked to play music at, which is all good and fine, but it's just another thing, you know? And then and the deal with this wedding, and this is the stipulation in this wedding is why I don't want to mention any names, is like, because this is my one sort of complaint with it, is that they made it so specific and so clear on their wedding invitations and in person whenever you talk to them and all the time. They make it so, that's like the big, from the platform, like with the megaphone, like what we want sort of thing, is no children allowed at the wedding.
Mm.
No kids allowed. Don't even think about it. Do not bring them. Which, yeah, you know, like part of their argument is because it's on, it's near the water. And I understand that they, yeah, I know, but here it's like, well, I'm trying to sympathize with them a little bit. Like, they don't want to have any liability issues if something happens, if a kid falls in or whatever. Although I would say all of that responsibility is on us. Mm-hmm. if we let our 10-month-old baby roll into the ocean, probably we're not so great at having them around. But we, yeah, so we, they say no children allowed. It's a, and on the invitation, it's like, it is a, like a child-free celebration. It's like a super bold letters. And they were like, what we offer for the wedding, for all of our friends who have kids, which, by the way, all their friends who have kids, it's quite a lot of kids, and it's a wide range of age. Like ours, mm-hmm. ours are going to be like between 9 and 10-month-old babies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also people with like toddlers who are like more like 4 or 5 years old. And they're saying, for the people with kids, we've hired a nanny to watch them for the wedding. And it's like some Greek woman. I mean, nothing against that. Maybe she's amazing, but like just some Greek lady we don't know who or may not, you know, who may or may not speak, you know, English or German very well. We don't know. And she's supposed to watch all of these kids. And it's like our, you know, it just doesn't make sense. So now we've incorporated that we're bringing another friend with us and we're going to pay for her flight so that she stays in the hotel with the babies after we've put them to sleep to keep an eye on them and like, you know, rub their backs or put the pacifier back in if they wake up so that they stay sleeping. And then we have to take turns at the ceremony. I'll be there at a certain window of time because I have to play so many songs, and then we'll have to trade. I'll have to go to the hotel and hang with our friend and wait there while Efi goes to the party for a while. And it's just like, so much.
Dude.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And we're going there, and I'm going to miss Phoebe Bridgers.
That's awful.
That's, it's really crazy.
Awful. I've also seen so many, like I've seen, because I was not in the mood for festivals or anything, and then Tony came up with, like, hey, do you want to come with me to this festival in August? And I was like, I don't like that specific festival so much.
Which one is it? Or do you not want to say?
Look, or no, like it's FM4 Frequency in Austria. Like I like the festival in general, but I don't like the lineup that much. That's the thing.
Oh, okay.
And then I checked on other festivals and saw so many great things, like Reading Festival, Arctic Monkeys, Liam Gallagher, Declan McKenna, Rage Against the Machine, which I never saw. There could be a possibility to see them live again.
That would be cool.
Such crazy things. But yeah. So many weddings. And I can say, like, as far as I remember from being a little child, since my parents were not so old when they had me, like, as a kid, I had to come to weddings as well. And for children, weddings are the worst, just like you mentioned, because there's always this idea of adults, okay, we're going to have one person that watch the kids, or form a group of all kids that are there. And then you have a range from, like, tiny little babies, for like 9-year-olds. And like the older kids are like, okay, what are we going to do here? Like it's...
It's insane.
But yeah. But that also might be a problem that you go to so many weddings. Because I thought about... What is...
Like, I've had to turn down concerts.
Exactly.
Like playing concerts. I've had to turn down two.
Shit. Because I must say, like now I checked, it's nearly a year since Simple Swimmer came out. And dude, and I must say,
I played like three,
like shows. I got back into it somehow. I don't know. It's like I told you the story already. Like I had with your first album. This time it was the other way around. I'll get to that in a second. But like I had this phase where I listened to it so much. Obviously, also because I had to practice it. And now for the past like 9 or even 10 months since we played that show at Theresienwiese.
Right.
Like, as a listener, it fell off my radar.
Sure, yeah.
And since like last week or something, I got back into it because I had kind of an earworm of this, just this last part of How I Go Down. Go on, take the trash out.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Which has kind of become my get yourself together mantra.
Oh, that's so nice. That's cool.
And I got back into it. And dude, it's such a great album.
Thanks, man. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I almost forgot. I don't know how or why, but I almost forgot. It's such a great album.
Man, thank you. I always feel like because of, I don't know, could be because of a lot of reasons. Maybe it's too different from 12 Songs for 12 Friends, or perhaps it was released at the wrong time, or perhaps the label didn't do quite what was expected. Who knows? It could be a lot of, maybe the songs just aren't.
And you didn't even have the chance to like get it to the people.
I couldn't perform it. There's so many things. Like, probably a lot of it is the timing in which we released it, because I think you have to be a much bigger artist to drop it with no shows for there to be people who want to hear it. You have to tour the songs, and maybe we should have waited longer. I don't know. But I always felt like Simple Swimmer was very slept on compared to 12 Songs. And I found 12 Songs to be pretty slept on. So this was even bigger of like of no one noticing sort of thing. And I was like, oh man. And that's why, like, immediately after it came out, I put two different singles out, like collaboration singles. Like,
yeah.
I think in, I don't know, August or something after it came out, I had a song with my friend Tom Yanks. Or no, I had the one with Moonmates from Regensburg, Pieces. And then this other one with Tom Yanks, Waiting for Love. And I was like, you know what? Let's just keep music coming out. And that was the last ones I had put out. I think Pieces came out while I was in the hospital with the babies. It came, like, everything came out like right at the last possible moment. And so it's always nice to hear that. I'm actually at this Greek wedding playing a few songs with this guy that I don't know. His name is Phil. And we were texting about, like, how do you want to do this John Mayer song? How do you want to do this Taylor Swift song? What key should we, just like trying to map it out because we can't practice. We have no time to actually meet. And then he said, by the way, because the people who are getting married asked if maybe I play one or two of my own songs. Mm-hmm. And they didn't say which ones. I guess I'll choose. So I'll play Stoned and...
You can go right on ahead and...
Fuck yourself. Yeah, dude. I was thinking I'll play Better Off Dead and Stoned. You guys said I could choose whatever I wanted. And this guy wrote me and said, hey, do you mind if I play along with you on your songs? I've just finally checked out your album and it's really great. I said, oh, that's so nice. Thank you. And I asked him which one, because I just always assume they mean 12 songs. And he said, oh, the one, whichever is the one that has the crooked rail on it. I was like, oh, dude, thanks. That's Simple Swimmer. But I've been playing Simple Swimmer, the song, much differently recently. Like, I found a way to pick it out.
To so finally bit... play it as advanced swimmer.
Yeah, now I can play as an advanced swimmer. Yeah, eventually maybe I can do like a deep sea diver sort of skill, but no, but it's I'm playing that and just challenging myself a bit more with the songs, like trying more different things. And that all accumulates to Wednesday of last week, I got to support Pine Grove at the Hansa 39.
Ooh, nice.
Venue. That was really cool. I was in, oh, let me put that down that we, I was in Oberstdorf for this wedding. There was like, I had talked about it on the last episode of the podcast as well, that I had played these concerts with the Hoylitte, like with Ify's dad and stuff, as like just a guitar player in the band. Did you know about that?
Yeah, you told me about it.
The Hoylitte shows. So I did those three. It was three sold out shows. It was really like Vorderhändelang, Fellheim, and Zonthofen.
Fellheim.
Yeah, at a synagogue.
Okay.
I don't. It was like an hour away, maybe a little more than an hour.
Okay.
And all this, so this was all really fun and great, and it was nice shows. So I was really warmed up, and then Wednesday came around, and I knew I had to play my own songs again, and support this band that I really like. And it was like in Munich, and it was for people that it was like a show, like a Jordan Prince show again. And I thought, oh man, I haven't done this in so long. How am I going to pull this off? And so I practiced the day of the show. I practiced the songs that my set list that I had built, like what I wanted to play. And then I did my drive. It was like 2 hours and a little more because of traffic back to Munich. Picked up some things from the apartment, went straight to the venue, immediately sound checked, met the band. They were super nice. And then I didn't really have much time after that. It was like 30 minutes later, they wanted me to start and no one was there. And I felt so bad. I was like, do we really have to kick this off like at 7:40? And they were like, yeah, because the band has to go to the airport after, so we have to keep a schedule. And I said, oh, okay. And everybody that like I knew a lot of musicians that came to the show, and after the show I saw them and they said, man, you know, we were all told that Pine Grove was going to start at like nine something, so we thought you would start at 8:30. So everyone thought, they knew I was going to play, but they thought I was playing later. So a lot of people that I knew missed the show entirely.
I know.
So I was like, oh man. But there is good news. I started with like 4 or 5 people and I just made it all about them. Like I was talking.
Nice.
There's this one couple. There was a girl with crutches and her boyfriend, I guess. And I was talking to them for a lot of the first few songs, like making fun of how, and you know, and making fun of being on time. We're all on time, then no one's here. And telling them the story about like working on this TV show and like playing Smiling for them and really making it like, here's your show for you. Like, you're good people. Thanks for being here. And then as I played, I think I did like 35 minutes. And as I played, people started filling into the room, thankfully. So I started my first couple of songs with maybe like 5, 6 people. And by the time I got to the end of the slot, it was more like 100 people, mm-hmm. which is fine because the whole show was like 160, 170.
Okay.
So at the end, it felt like, oh, okay, there's like a real group here. And I had fun with it. I was nervous the first couple songs, but then I had fun with it. I was making jokes, telling stories, talking about the album. I think my merch spread is really good right now. I've got the tote bags, the buttons, the stickers, the vinyls, the CDs, the posters. I think it looks really good. And so I basically just played the songs, and at the end, everyone was really nice. And I watched Pine Grove. They played great. They had great sound. Great songs. I don't know if you're into them or if you know who they are. It's this American band. I've heard the
name, but I'm not really into their music yet.
There's a couple of songs I think you'd really like. I don't know if you'd love them in general. The dude's voice is really unique, but mm-hmm. I like it because of his voice, but I know that it's a divisive
okay.
factor. And yeah, they played great. And then afterwards, I was at the merch table, and thankfully I sold a good bit of merch. Like, people love the bags. I sold some vinyls, like some bundle packages with mm-hmm. the CDs and vinyls. People were super nice. I had one guy come up to me and say, hey, you're the guy from the radio show, aren't you? And I was like, hey, all right. American Sunday fans, they're everywhere.
Now we're talking.
It. Dude, that was not to make it all about me. So like, not to really like talk about anything braggadocious, but that was the second time that week I had been recognized for something I was doing. And that yeah. was so, that feeling is so great, man. I think I told the story before about how last year I was walking to the river with my friend Giovanni, and this girl freaked out about the videos. So I've never seen her again or anything, but that always stays in my mind. Like, wow, that was such a crazy experience. It's because it happens like once a year. And then a few weeks ago, before I went to Oberstdorf for the wedding and the concerts, I was pushing the stroller around and this guy stops me and says, hey, you're Jordan Prince, right? And I was like, hi, yeah. And he said, oh man, I love your videos. You're so funny. And you have this radio show, American Sunday. We listen to it every week. And I was like, that's so nice. Thank you. And then to play the Pine Grove show, and have this other guy mention it too. I was like, this is great. Like, something's working here. Sold some merch and then somehow drove all the way back to Oberstdorf the same day.
Oh no.
And man, that was such a tough, tough, tough drive. I have to tell you, it was so difficult getting back. I was so tired, but I made it back. And then, the next day was kind of relaxed. I swam in the Geiger pool, which is ice cold. But yeah, it's like the reason I brought that up was because we were talking about playing shows and just like playing that support slot really was such a challenge to like look at my own songs again and see what I like and don't like about them and how to make them live, like how to perform them again.
Yeah, sure.
And so, yeah, with the weddings happening, I had to turn down some other ones.
But one thing I want to say, since you mentioned like you somehow managed to adapt to the situation, only four or five people being there and making it about them. Right. I feel like that's something you have really grown into over the last few years. Probably a little bit affected by what we do here and obviously your radio show, like, but being a great entertainer on stage.
Oh, thanks, man.
Because I felt at times like years ago that you, and I hope this doesn't sound offensive, but you didn't care about that aspect that much.
I was too nervous, I think.
Or
probably.
Yeah, or probably that as well, or just that. And I think you really found a great like onstage persona or role like to entertain people in between your songs. And that's something great.
I think first off, thank you. And I think there's like two versions of that guy. And sometimes when the show has a bit more rock energy and the energy is high and I've had a few beers and we're really pumping out like some good catchy tunes, then that guy is super goofy and loves to like point people out, make a weird joke, laugh about it out loud and just like, let's go. 1, 2, 3, 4. Which is like its own different thing. And then the other guy is the like the calmer storyteller, like subtle joke guy from the Pine Grove show, which I think he's probably the more skilled of the two characters that are on. But I have to be in the right mood for whichever one. And I'm thankful for it too. I'm sure it's a lot to do with learning how to fill space either on this show, like from all the solo episodes or from the radio show. Probably.
And I mean, that's the one of the first lessons of like basically any role that has to do with entertainment in under what circumstances, whatever, like losing the fear of silence and like you said, filling like spaces.
Like that. I was writing down losing the fear of silence. That's a great line. And you know, like slightly adjacent to that was also, I haven't written any new songs in forever. I have this one that I have the intro, I have the melody for the verse, I have the chorus, I have the bridge, I have all of the tools to make that song, but I haven't written any lyrics and I have all of the melodies built and the progression. It's all there, which is the hardest part. But I haven't written the text for it. So that'll be the first baby that I try and knock out when I get really back in the zone. And then when I was playing the concerts with Efi's dad, those are the great moments where I feel like an actual musician, where I'm not the lead guy, but I'm the hired gun who comes in and like really focuses in on the guitar and tries to play the best that he can and sings harmonies and really practices it. And like, I love being that guy because I'm never that guy.
Yeah.
And I miss being in a band. That was also like, oh, I'm in a band. I love being in a band and not being the main face.
Yeah.
You know, like Big Lemois, I was the side guy. And it was just so much more freeing because I could just focus on like what makes this song sound good. And doing that, I found so many new little things in playing guitar that I had just forgotten about or just were fresh for me. And I found so many new beautiful melodies and guitar structures that will all be able to be turned into new songs. Like my phone voice memo, like library
yeah,
is just stacked to the brim with like the snippets of new ideas. And that's all I really need, is I need to have that library full. And then when I really feel like, okay, I have this inner urge in me again to write songs, then I'll have it all there to just sit down and write out text and have a new song. But it's just been, it's been a while, and I think it'll still be a little more time until that urge swallows me up again. But it's slowly crawling back. Like, I didn't even have an urge in the last few months to even just pluck around on the guitar at home. But because I had to practice so much for the concerts and for that wedding, and now even more for the new weddings, because I have different now. And the one is that that second wedding in July is in Italy, and I have to play more songs there.
My man's all over Europe.
That's crazy, dude. Yeah, that's a whole different thing. I went to America. I'm Greece, Germany, Italy. I'll be in France later this year. It's nuts.
I guess you pictured something else, like touring with your guitar through Europe than that.
I wish, man. I turned down, we can wrap up with this, but I turned down a show yesterday. It was a festival that I had played back in 2017,
which
was great. The festival is called Oben Air, like Oben mm-hmm. Air. And it's a festival like at a castle, I think in Zell near Mosel. It's like Marienburg at the Zell on the Mosel. It's like all these words I don't know. I don't know. But I put in whatever it said, yeah. Zell and Mosel. I put it into Google Maps. And it's almost 6 hours drive from here. And I asked my booking guy, I was like, okay, that's quite a drive. What's the rate that they want? And they wanted a full band for like a really, really, really bad, low wage, low rate. And I was like, dude, that's not even talking about your booking fee. I was like, after that, that's all gas.
Yeah.
I was like, that means I can't give my guys anything. I go in the hole and it's just to say that I played it. I was like, I played it before. It's a great festival. The lineup looks good, but I that doesn't make any sense for me. Yeah. It's like, if I was already on the road,
yeah,
sure, throw it on. But I was like, I can't do it. And he's like, you know what? You're totally right. That's a bad rate.
Yeah.
He's like, no wonder, man. Especially
since gas prices are so crazy.
Yeah, the gas is so high right now. And like, I mean, I love driving our car, and now I have the space for to take a band wherever I need to go. It's great to have it. But just that kind of thing, it just doesn't make any sense. And I was hoping it was closer to Munich, you know, like driving up for Pine Grove or things like that. Or because also that, you know, if it's more exposure, or if you think the audience for that band matches your audience, like the style, you know, you'll do it. You'll waste the time and waste the money to go do it. But yeah, sometimes it's just really, really, really not worth it. And you just have no other option but to just say, I'm sorry, I can't do it. And he was like, for sure. And the other good news is, there's two good news is here at the end. One is Thursday. Yeah, today when this comes out, I will have a meeting in the morning, finally, with a copyright music lawyer to finally either find out for myself, is this realistic? Is this something I can work with? Would this guy, because I met him through a friend, through a film agent, if he will be able to say, look, I know you don't make that much money, but for this kind of deal, I'll look at all of your contracts from now on, make sure you get the best deals. Or he'll say, look, I can't give you good deals. I have to treat everyone the same. To do your contracts would be too expensive. And then I'll know. And then I'll say, okay, thanks for your time. And, you know, that's all fine and good. But I'm so tired of getting contracts for all these TV jobs and just not knowing if it's going to protect me or protect the music.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just need to have someone who can read it for me. Yeah, I have no one who can read it for me.
I mean, you did quite some jobs like these.
Dude, I've done so many jobs in the last few years. And some of them are collaboration jobs. Some of them are just like you have to sign it the way it is to do it. You have to get the money somehow. But I know that it's not the best play out. And now I'm doing, you know, this, I just did my own TV show. And there's still contracts that are being sent in for the final publishing for all that stuff. And I they got a second season. And if they get a third or fourth, that's really good publishing royalties.
Yeah, sure.
I got to make sure that since I'm self-publishing that I get, anyway, but that's for another time. And the other thing is, for those who listen and are in the Munich area, because I'm starting here, because this is probably our most compact audience amount. I would say, like, if you're around Munich and if you want to see something really special, maybe you should look into the Mila Club on Friday, July 1st, because there's something very special happening there. There's going to be a band playing, some friends of mine. They've announced it. So they're going to be out there. They have their flyers up. They have their posters out. They have their announcement online. And they are going to have a special guest playing this show. I think you can probably guess who it is. And we're kind of doing it as a special surprise guest thing. The band playing at the Mille is Dobre. And they're very good. And they're really nice guys. And yeah, they have a very wink, wink special guest performing as well at this show. So I would love to maybe possibly see you guys there.
Nice.
Because I haven't played a... Oh, no, it's me. Yeah, I haven't played a show in a long time. So it'd be a nice chance to do something like on a stage again since Pine Grove. But all right, man, I have to wrap it up here. I think this was an amazing show.
Yeah, for the next time, I think it would be super interesting because we touched a little bit on that to get deeper into how you're writing songs, because I think we haven't talked too much about that, and I think this could be pretty interesting. But then came to my mind, yeah, this is not going to be next week probably, because next week, as far as I know, we're going to have a guest.
That's right. Yeah. Next week is very special. Definitely make sure to share this with your friends, to subscribe or to make sure it stays on your feed, because next week we have a very, very, very special guest. It's the return of one of our favorite previous guests. We'll leave it at that for now. It's someone I'm very impressed with, proud of, thankful to have on the show. Very, very, very talented human being. We've got them on for next week for a return update episode. Very excited about it. So make sure to, yeah, stay in touch with us. Thank you for listening as always. And Mo, it was an absolute pleasure.
It was. Sayonara.
Sayonara.
What a wonderful episode. If you enjoyed today's episode and you like our show, please go to Apple Podcasts, give us a subscription or a review or a comment. It really helps new listeners find our show. You can also follow us on Instagram at Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. We're also now on Facebook and on YouTube and on Twitter at Fartsy Artsy. No, at Artsy Fartsy Pod. We changed it at Artsy Fartsy Pod. Woo! So, yes, and if you want to financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/JordanPrince, and where you can submit for as low as $3 a month some money to help us get this show bigger and better just for you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Look out, baby, the saints are coming through, and it's all over now.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.